Hello and welcome to The Lineup, featuring True Blue LA. It makes it sound like you and I are the only entities of True Blue LA, which is so far from true. But
on the podcasting side, though, like
for now we're just gonna be some elite talent
gonna be an empire.
Trey Turner is actually gonna eschew all baseball activities. And
wait, is he gonna join the podcast I don't know if you've seen different budget numbers that I've seen.
There's mutual interest between the two. So
I don't know if we can afford that guy.
So we're back after a couple of weeks. I was very sick last week, so you went solo. So when you go solo on a obviously you don't do this longer one, I think, right? You didn't do it without me, did you?
No. I would never do a lineup.
But on Dodgers Rewind, are you asking yourself the trivia question?
Okay, so yeah, so if I do a solo rewind, at some point in August, I took 5 days off, and I had to pre-record a bunch of podcasts that week. So some of those we recorded in advance, and then a couple of the rewinds I just did by myself, and I just don't have trivia for those. But last week, because we were planning to record. But then you weren't feeling well, so I had a full notes write up for the trivia question. I believe it was Rick Rodin. Yeah, Rick Rodin last week, and I asked the audience and then did the wait till like later in the podcast, and then I revealed.
Ooh,
but if you want to spoil it, I can ask you. In this episode as a bonus trivia question, if you want.
Yeah, sprinkle it in there. We're gonna take a quick break and then, you know, catch up on your NL West champions along with some questions for Greg after this. An eventful 2 weeks.
Kind of, I guess, if you count.
Did you see those costumes? Come on.
That's right. Michael Elizondo, he was doing one of his various trips, watching the Dodgers in various cities. He was in all three games in San Diego, and he just happened to be by the the team bus or wherever the team exited there, and got a lot of footage. We're running a post on Thursday on that, sort of his recap of the weekend. It was pretty good. So, yeah, that was good. But also, I was going to say, not only did the Dodgers win the division, but they clinched a playoff spot 2 days in a row before that.
It's a third clinch. It's exciting.
That's right. We're recording this on Wednesday. This is snapping the streak of Dodgers clinching. The next thing in line for them is clinching a bye past the wild card round, and they have to just finish ahead of the Cardinals. So they have a little bit of work to do that. So this is snapping the streak. I'm sure if you saw that, Sunday, it was thought that the Dodgers clinched because they had the tiebreaker with Milwaukee, but there was then MLB made an error, and then Monday morning they're like, hey, there could be like a 3 or 4 team tiebreaker that results in the Dodgers being the team on the outside looking in. So you haven't technically clinched, and then they went and clinched Monday night anyway. So, yeah, fun times.
Did you catch that error at all?
No. So I guess I wasn't thinking too much about it. But in hindsight, it makes a lot of sense. Because when it came out Monday morning, like, there were really no details that I saw. So I tried to like reverse engineer it. I'm sure there were multiple iterations of it, but like it was basically at that point the Dodgers hadn't clinched the division yet. So you had to assume that the Padres would overtake the Dodgers. So the Dodgers lose every game, the Brewers win every game, because that was the only way to get them to tie. And then, I think the one of the scenarios was Brewers, Cardinals,
Dodgers, the Brewers hold the tiebreaker, the head-to-head tiebreaker against the Cardinals, so they would win the division,
and then you end up with like I guess that it would have worked with only a three team with that, because the Dodgers play the Cardinals. The Dodgers won 2 out of 3 against the Cardinals, but they play 3 times next weekend. So had the Cardinals won out, or the Dodgers lost out, so they would win the season series with the Dodgers. So yeah, it was all sorts of weird, but there was a couple more, I think, with like the Phillies. I don't remember the exact things, but yeah, I didn't catch it at the time, but it was very confusing. But it was one of those, like, more an annoyance. I mean, annoyance is the wrong word. I found it kind of fun to go through,
yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
But it was like, yeah, can you imagine? It. I will say it did. There's one person in our comment section who was very adamant. Even after the Dodgers fully clinched and celebrated the division, they have the tiebreaker with the Padres. There's no chance of any sort of scenario in if the doomsday scenario, if the Dodgers lost out and the Padres won out, that the Dodgers would still not be division champion. But he was adamant, or they were adamant. I don't know the gender here. I can guess. They were adamant that because they only clinched a tie, that they Dodgers, he didn't want a participation trophy division. It was the most dumbest trophy you could possibly imagine. Anyway, yeah, so that was that. And what else? Oh, the one error I did make that I did not catch at the time was speaking of dress up. So the backstory that was hilarious in that was Joey Gallo and Justin Turner went as Chippendales dancers, and Justin Turner like secured the wore like a torso shirt, like a muscle shirt that was like that went over the body and had like the painted on muscles and stuff, and it was flesh colored, and also the cufflinks and bow tie. And he bought extra cufflinks and bow ties just in case. So, like, Andre Jackson was called up over the weekend, so they didn't have a costume for him. They're sort of like, hey, you're Chippendales. And so he did it without – they didn't have extra shirts. So everybody's like, whatever, I'll do it. And then Joey Gallo didn't have one either, and he's like, whatever, I'll do it too. So he was just bare-chested and doing it. But Justin Turner told the story that after giving Bellinger the stuff, he overheard him like talking, I guess, in the batting cage or something, and he's going, I get the you know, the whole Chippendales thing, but what do the cufflinks have to do with the mice? And he was thinking it was about Chippendale, but then I made the mistake of referring to them as mice in both written and podcast form when they are chipmunks, and that was just a slip up on my part. And so I already apologized on the leading off podcast, but just thought I'd bring it. I'm just saying as a reminder, if you think Chippendale are mice, they are not. They are chipmunks, but they are rodents. So yeah, I'm basically right.
I'll we'll have trivia later that I'll be nice to you now. We're sure, yeah. They're rodents. You weren't wrong at all.
Yeah. Well, so I guess now that the Dodgers
are... Speaking of being wrong, let's guess a playoff roster.
Yeah, I was going to say, now that the Dodgers are in, right, like they're... like, we don't... We have an idea of where they're going to finish ultimately, but the fact that they're in the playoffs means there's going to be a playoff roster, so that means we get to guess it, and that means, like, us first figuring out the locks, it's really going to come down to, like, a handful of decisions that either we agree or disagree on, but there's really not. I mean, I don't want to say there's not a ton of choices because there's still so many sort of variables, but I think the fact that there's so many injured pitchers still that they're sort of waiting on, like, that throws a wrench into things, like, about exactly who's available. So I think that's the main sort of weird determinant in all this. I don't know.
So you want to catch us up on that specifically?
Sure. So we're recording this on a Wednesday, and today specifically was very active in terms of the various Dodgers who are at least on the way back. Like, I think there were, three bullpen sessions and a live batting practice session. So as we record at right now, there's seven Dodgers pitchers on the injured list. Tommy Canley was just activated after missing 4 months with a bone bruise. He was activated Tuesday. He didn't pitch in the clincher, but imagine he'll pitch at some point either tonight or this weekend. Since last record, Blake Treinen went back on the injured list after only pitching twice. He had shoulder tightness. There's uncertainty about that, you know, obviously, because he missed 4.5 months. I guess he threw a bullpen session on Wednesday. Dave Roberts called it, quote, clean and normal, were various things he used to describe it with reporters before Wednesday's game. And that's a contrast from earlier, I think, over the weekend or possibly late last week, that Treinen was they were, like, concerned with just the exactly how he was progressing or whatever. Like, so anyway, the earliest he can come back is September 22nd. So if that's the case, there's still 2 weeks left in the season. Being a reliever, you don't necessarily need to that much time to ramp up, but at the very least you could, I think even if Trinan is back and healthy, he's in a position where he's not going to be Trinan, you know, like right. They're not going to be able to go like a lot of back to backs. They're not going to be able to go like inning in a third or something, I think, with him. So I think you have to sort of consider him at least limited if he's back. But I think the biggest question mark and the biggest sort of swing in terms of how it would affect things is Tony Gonsolin. Remember way back when they said he's only going to miss two starts. So he also had a bit of a setback. He was still dealing with soreness. He's still sort of in bullpen session mode. He pitched a bullpen session on Wednesday too. I guess that went okay. You probably won't really know until the day after or something. Dave Roberts did say, just given the timing, that he was asked, like, could he be pitched possibly in a relief role? Or I would consider like that something like they might use an opener with him or something like that for a shortened outing because he might not be stretched out. But Dave Roberts did say, quote, everything is on the table. So, again, if he's back, diminished. So Tommy Canley was on the 60-day injury list when they brought him back. He was on rehab in Oklahoma City with Victor Gonzalez and Danny Duffy, who were also on the 60-day injured list. So Gonzalez and Duffy, though, it was going to be decision day coming soon for both of those guys, but they had setbacks. So they basically paused their rehab assignments. I don't think it's been official yet, but I would probably consider them like not available at this point, like are very, very unlikely. Like, I just don't think they're going to pitch. They're probably not going to be activated at all, I would guess. But then the others that threw today on Wednesday were Yency Almonte. He was the one with the simulated game. I guess he's either supposed to do one more simulated game or possibly go on a rehab. I don't know how long the rehab or if it's just something short. But it sounds like he might be the soonest one back, as like maybe as early as next week. He's been out for a little bit now. I think it's been over a month. Brusdar Graterol also threw a bullpen. David Price threw a bullpen. Price can't be activated till middle of next week, I believe. So there's just a lot of question marks. That's a lot, right? Like of those guys. So I would say let's figure out the locks. We talked about the pitchers, so let's go to the easier side as a palate cleanser here for a little bit. the position players. So there's currently 14 active players, right? And there's in playoff rosters, there's a pitcher limit of 13. You know they're going to carry 13 and 13. That seems like a given. So Gavin Lux hasn't played since September 1st, right? The Dodgers haven't called anyone else up. Like, they didn't put him on the injured list. They didn't do it. They're not going to, you know, usually the MO is like, we're never going to like waste an opportunity to like gain an advantage, right? Like, we're going to maximize our roster, that sort of thing. Nope. They're like, we could call up Edwin Rios. We can call up James Allen. We can call, you know, those guys are have redundancies on the current roster. They don't play the infield like Lux does. They could have called up Jake Amaya if they just needed a fill-in infielder. They're like, nah, we're good. And so they haven't called anyone else up. So I would say it's safe to assume the current 14 active players are the ones vying for the 13 spots. The one wild card I will throw into this that I still don't think is likely, but it's at least possible, is Kevin Pillar, who had quote-unquote season-ending shoulder surgery in June. But he started baseball activities at some point in August. He's starting a rehab assignment, I believe, with Oklahoma City this week. I have not checked the Wednesday. They're playing a doubleheader as we record. I didn't see if he's playing tonight or has joined them yet. But he's one of those, you know, you could see like if they want the veteran guy, that kind of a thing. So he's at least possible. But let's go through. I think this is pretty easy. But do you just want to run through the position players and figure out which ones are the locks?
Sure. Yeah. So like you said, it is all, kind of silly how easy it is. Yeah.
We're recording on a Wednesday, right? So it's the day after they clinch the division. So I don't think we can include bench players Freddie Freeman, Justin Turner, Trey Turner, and Mookie Betts as locks because they're on the bench tonight. So that's rough. Yeah. So speaking of, I guess this is newsworthy. Freddie Freeman didn't start the day after they clinched the division. It's the only time he hasn't started all year. I guess he lobbied for it, but Dave Roberts said they made an arrangement earlier in the year that he would let him start every game till they clinched the division. Then he gave him the start off. So, I think, you know, Smith and Barnes, obviously the catchers. You have Freeman, both Turners, and then Max Muncy. And then in the outfield, Betts. And then, look, we've all talked about how everyone's, like, struggling, right? But Bellinger, Trace Thompson, Joey Gallo, Chris Taylor. And then, so that's 11. The 12th, I think, lock is, it really depends on health, is Gavin Lux. But I think, for me, like, those 12 are locks. What
I'm right on board. To me, the more possibly interesting discussion is how they handle the starting left field and center field position. Is that a thing they constantly are rotating in and out, which is kind of what they've done in the season? Or do they, as you've advocated for, didn't say no Trace is going to start every game one way or the other? It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it is. They basically had those four guys, Bellinger and Gallo from the left side, Taylor and Trace Thompson from the right side, essentially take all the left and center field starts for the last few weeks. Or a few weeks, more than that by now, and with a few other starts occasionally mixed in at other positions. But yeah, like I still think they're going to mix and match a little bit. They're not doing like a straight platoon or anything. And Taylor's been playing more second base when Lux is out. So that is interesting. I think another interesting thing is what if Lux is supposed to play this weekend. He hasn't played since September 1st, but in a scenario where he's not available, like that, that's where it might even get, I don't know if it's more interesting because it's probably, they just take everyone at that point who's currently active, but like, yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly who starts. I think it's one of those things with Bellinger because his defense is so good. He had like back-to-back two-hit games, and they're like, oh, he's fixed again, you know, that kind of a thing. So
right.
It's kind of all he needs. Who knows? But so that basically leaves one decision, right, where it's speaking of, look, we're not here to live disseminate a baseball game, but Trace Thompson did just hit a home run. So as we're recording, so clearly he needs to start. He's batting cleanup in this post-clinch game, by the way.
The only thing I would say is we've seen a few times before. I'm struggling to think of sort of some more concrete examples, but where things seem kind of nebulous. It's happened with Kenley before, to use the other side of the diamond. But where they really do use this last period of, you know, whether it's whole month or weeks, to kind of see where guys are at, give guys some rope. But as soon as the playoffs start, that stops. And if Trace keeps doing what he's done since coming to the Dodgers, I feel like he's going to start almost every game one way or the other.
I don't know if I would go that far in terms of every game. I think the one guy who could do that and sort of run with it is Chris Taylor. So like all four of those guys, they all strike out a ton. Actually, amazingly, Bellinger has like the lowest strikeout rate of the bunch. But the other three are like in the top 10, I think, in the majors this year in strikeout rate. But the thing is, with all the missed contact, like Trace Thompson still has incredible stats. He has like a high batting average on balls in play, but his batted ball data is like amazing. He's even with the strikeouts, he's the one still like crushing the ball. Now, that said, Chris Taylor in the last like week or so has looked a lot better. So he did that last year too. He was struggling a lot down the stretch, and then he obviously got hot into the playoffs, and that helped. And he, you know, I think you might go with a track record situation there, where I think Taylor maybe starts like a lot, and then.
But is there a world where, I guess in my mind, it's Trace in center and Taylor in left.
Yeah,
like it's
certainly possible.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, we've talk about good problems. It's not a bad problem to have when arguably the best defensive center fielder in baseball is this defensive replacement who, you know, he still has a little pop in his bat, but you know, I two games in a row of the multi-hit games, I'm still not completely convinced.
Sure. Yeah. No, and that's the thing, like of the group, the only one who, I mean, Thompson actually has better numbers against righties. I mean, not career wise, but this year he has. So, but the only one they're really platooning is Gallo. I think he's only batted five times against the left-handed pitcher since the Dodgers got him. So, like, even in games he starts, like, if there's a situation where, like, there's a lefty coming in, like, they'll usually pinch hit for him at some point. So, like, that's something to watch, too. The others, like, if Trace is starting, like, defensively, he's good enough to where he would play the whole game. But there's a lot of situations where, like, Thompson ends up playing the last, like, 3-4 innings or something after replacing Gallo because of defense and or handedness or whatever. But yeah, that you're right. It's going to be interesting with playing time. But so I guess that comes down to the only real decision here is Hanser Alberto, utility infielder slash extra pitcher, obviously. Can you imagine him closing out a playoff game? By the way, that'd be amazing.
I mean, in the NLCS, when you've got that stretch without the day off, you know, if it's a big enough of blowout, I would not put it past them.
Look, I'm just saying, three inning save. That's all I want. Three inning save from Hanser Alberto to clinch a pennant. Can you imagine? I'd probably need my pinnacle. That would be the end. But yeah, so then Miguel Vargas, obviously, top sort of closest to the majors. He's in the majors. But so I was a little bit surprised at this. I looked up just before we started recording. Here are the September numbers for the Dodgers before Wednesday night. Both of them are starting Wednesday night. Vargas is at first base for Freddie Freeman. Alberto's at short for Trey Turner. Miguel Vargas, 13 plate appearances in 5 games. Hanser Alberto, 10 plate appearances in 4 games. Hanser's actually started like Gallo. They sort of pull him very quickly if a pinch hit situation comes up. Vargas has only started twice. These are before Wednesday, so 3 starts and 4 starts now with Wednesday. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised that Vargas has actually played more. So I was sort of thinking going like a couple weeks ago that given how sparingly Vargas was being played, I didn't think he had much of a chance, but I think he has much more of a chance now, if only because their main purpose for Alberto is the occasional start against lefties, but he's really not doing that except for literally very occasionally. They have, with Taylor back, they have the right-handed hitting infielder who could do that. If that's what they sort of want, and they're not going to, I mean, I guess they could in a situation pull like Justin Turner late for defense or something, but like not that late, right? Like are you really going to take him out of the lineup in like the 7th inning or something of a game, unless some weird situation, but like, I think they have enough just given they barely used him in September, and with Vargas, he at least gives them the opportunity of like a, you know, a potential like much more lethal bat, although he hasn't like done it quite yet, but in terms of potential, he's certainly there.
I we got here and I wasn't even realized who we hadn't said, so I didn't to me Vargas has like there's enough season left to where this could change, but to me it's Alberto. Like to me there's just no chance.
Yeah,
they like even if it doesn't necessarily have a role, just having that sort of well, it's backup catcher-esque utility feature. You mentioned Chris Taylor, who obviously can kind of fit that bill, but I also feel like he maybe end up too important in the
sure
left field outfield rotation to really count on him to kind of do both, and in sort of an emergency or whatever situation, and just having another. It's not the greatest option, but having the bench opportunity and sort of a weird platoon situation where they've used him in spots is, you know, fairly recently where I didn't think they would because, you know, he's not like he's bringing that much of a bat in, but where they've prioritized that. So Yeah. I would be like, that said, if, excuse me, if Vargas has a really good last 4 weeks, I think he could play himself onto that spot. And then, and also this assumes everyone stays healthy. And as soon as anyone is or hurt, things can get changed. So,
right. And so I would say too, if you look at it, like you're right that Hanser might fit more of what they need in terms of after a series of like, you know, the 12 hitters they're going to use the most, like if Gallo's available, right, he might pinch hit and then not stay in the game, but then you need to shift around. So then you have to plug in Alberto on defense or something. You can't really do that with Vargas because he's so raw everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really pinch hit a lot. So like, are you, if you're going to bring in Vargas, are you really going to have him? Vargas is a better prospect and I think possibly better hitter right now, or at least at the various stages, but than Matt Beatty was. But Matt Beatty got caught up in that where he didn't really have a defensive position. With the DH, they didn't really have a spot for him to pinch hit. That's why one of the reasons why they traded him. But like, if there's no situation where Vargas is going to pinch hit a lot, you know, like it's hard to see him on the roster in that point. It's a rough situation. I wonder, it might depend on the matchup. Like, so the Dodgers, if they're the one seed, they play the winner of the 4-5 matchup, the two non-division winning wild cards. And so in theory, it could be a situation where they face the better team, like either one of the Braves or Mets, who are going to be the 4 seed. If they end up winning the series, like the Dodgers can end up facing a tougher opponent as the 1 seed than the NL East winner as the 2 seed or whatever. But if you're looking at it and like say one, I don't even know. Like I guess the Mets are more right-handed, and I haven't looked. Maybe the Braves have more lefties, but so maybe it's a matchup situation where they want. I mean, they're both right-handed bats, right? But if you're just looking for an extra bat. Maybe that's Vargas's like only play. But yeah, I don't know. So you're saying Hanser, Alberto for yours. I think you're right. I will say
that of all the, of what you talked about, not calling one of the, I'm really surprised that Rios hasn't been given, you know, the cup of coffee through, especially through, you know, a Lux IL to at least see what they have there, considering how consistently good he's been for them outside of the hurt last season and how good he was this season before he got hurt.
Yeah, that has to be a bummer for him. Like, I wonder, like, what's going on there,
yeah,
too. Like,
and they know more than we do, I'm sure, you know. I'm sure there's a reason that I'm not privy to, but surprised me for sure.
And it's one of those things, right? Like, I guess this doesn't fully fit the bill, but the old adage that you don't lose your job to an injury.
Right.
He was second on the team in home runs. That said, he was only starting a little bit because there were injuries. So like, you know, like when he got hurt. So it's not like he was going to be everyday starter had he remained. But that said, he was also second on the team in home runs when he got hurt. And now he's not, they're not even calling him up. So like,
I think the Dodgers are probably doing the best thing, but also I guess I'm not surprised by this, unlike I am with Rios, but if this team wasn't as deep as it was, it would have been kind of fun to see them try to catch lightning in a bottle with Outman, just of how great he was with his cup of coffee, but how great he was in the minors.
The tail end of the season. 2 cycles in 4 days and he kept driving in runs. Like, so yeah.
Again, you're doing the right thing by taking to the more seasoned talent, but it would have been fun.
Yeah, and I also think I was actually prepared to pick Vargas, but the more we talked it through, I think I'm going to go with Hanser. It would have been better for a. I guess that's why neither of us make the big bucks in this. We're not we're not doing a first take style. One of us has to take one side. I think we're both going with Hanser on this. So yeah.
So pitching. So okay. So this is how I think we should do it. Is there to start off with pitching? Are there any pitchers that you just want to not even discuss because you think it's very unlikely that they'll be healthy?
Oh, that they'll be healthy.
Like, let's okay. IL. Like, everyone is in this is maybe situation. Is there anyone where you're like, let's not even.
Oh, okay, so Gonzalez and Duffy, even if I don't even think they were going to. They were probably lower on the totem pole anyway. Gonzalez maybe less so than Duffy. They weren't. They're out, right? Okay. Like, they're just out. Then I think everyone else is still in. Like, okay. So David Price, even, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't. Well, yeah, I don't want to rule anyone out. You know what? To be fair, Michael Grove, who's starting when they called him up at first spot start on Wednesday, I don't think he's going to make the playoff roster. Okay. So I will.
So
I will
let's say that he's out. Let's. Well, okay, and what we can do from there is tiers, right? And you go, pitchers get hurt. 4 weeks left. Who knows what can do? Figure this out, and then from there we go. Okay, here is the 13 we think. That are making the roster, but we get an idea of, well, if anyone's hurt, we think this is the next man up. You ready?
Sure, sure.
So in my tier one, and I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, which are the like super duper locks are Urias, Kershaw, Anderson, Kimbrel, Phillips.
I agree with that.
There's probably more. I'm having a small tier, small hall kind of philosophy here.
I wrote what I didn't do it in tiers. I just wrote an index card, like with just sort of grouping it. I just sort of went like starter list, reliever list.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things I saw the Sportsnet LA pregame stuff, and Roberts was saying, like, however, we have to get 27 outs. We're going to that. That sounds a lot like last year, you know, at certain times. So I'm sure they're going to do that. I would also say in the super lock category, I would say Chris Martin.
Okay. I have been told he has to make
that's
a
right.
case.
He's making
for
a case. That's right.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. And then, I guess before we delve into like all the relievers, then it becomes like, Andrew Heaney, who went through a stretch where he was giving up like so many home runs, but he's still been striking out a lot, so he's been like impressive. Dustin May has had trouble with command recently, and again, he's just coming back from Tommy John surgery. I hesitate to say they're locks, but I think they're going to be on in some fashion.
And I'm putting Gonsolin in this tier as well, because I'm right with you. Like, sure. I locks in that, like, unless they are hurt, I think they're making the roster. What their role looks like, I have no idea.
Yeah, so that's fair.
And I'm okay. You know, I want to, like you said, it sounded like last year. I actually think it will look closer to 2020, where I think the problem with last year is you just had, like, Urias going out of rotation and coming
they also only had three starters because Kershaw got hurt in the last weekend. So they really did have to scramble, and then obviously – those three starters were all various stages of gassed by the time the
and that's where in this situation out. Where I think it's more that again looking at 2020 and hopefully it goes better than in 2020 because neither Gonsolin or May really rose to the occasion of being these gopher like once through the lineup thing, but maybe Heaney, Gonsolin or May this time around can, and I think that may end up being the role for all of them, like I don't know. maybe one of them, like May especially, maybe can just prove like no, I can at least go twice. But we'll see. And obviously, Gonsolin has been so good this year. If he can get actually healthy and actually stretched out, we could see that. But that's looking less and less likely.
Right. So I think of the three, like Gonsolin is the least likely to get stretched out, but he's probably the best of of the three. Right. So. So
that's nine. Caleb Ferguson, I think, is next, and Almonte as well. I think are the next two in line for me. I think the only reason Almonte is as low as he is isn't in that upper tier is just because of the health concern.
Yeah, and that's fair. He of the injured relievers, he's probably the soonest one back. So they'll have a good idea where he's at fairly soon, I think. And then I would also argue. Since Ferguson, so Heaney is a lefty, obviously, and if he's in relief, I don't consider him a lefty reliever. He's more of a bulk guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I would also put Alex Vesia.
Absolutely.
So we're already at 12, right? So that's where it gets tricky. So now it becomes like you know,
again, I'm doing this trying to pretend the health situation is just everyone has a great rehab. They all come back strong. These are relievers, so they don't need to get stretched out. So Brusdar would be next for me. But it should be noted, I did not normally when we do these, I like to write out every name to make sure I'm not, because I always do blind spot. I just blind spotted Vesia, and so maybe I might be doing this again. So I defer to see if you have anything you want to bring up.
I would say in the team's eyes, mm-hmm. if healthy, Trinan is above. Sure.
Yep, told you he was doing it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like so, but that's the thing. Like whoever it really is, just going to be whoever's healthy. So like of the 12 we picked before Trinan, Gonsolin and Almonte currently on the injury list. So we really only have 10.
Right.
Right. So then it's just a matter of picking the last three.
And then sure, if everyone is, and this is where I'm trying to avoid thinking of health and saying if everyone's super healthy, then obviously Trinan is in our first tier. But this is I am guilty of doing the thing I was trying to avoid, which is
Trinan, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's really hard for me to give him full credit, full recovery, and given what he's gone through this year.
Right. So but then the only real other option, technically, just to cover our bases here, currently active still are Tommy Canely. I would put in the let's see what he is.
Yeah,
he's not injured, but he's also just coming back. So like he's in that group of well, let's see what we got. But then so also currently active though Phil Bickford and Justin Brule. Brule's not making the roster. Like I know he did last year. He pitched decently. I don't think he's making the roster.
Because of his handiness, he certainly could, right? You get the right if
he's got such crazy platoon splits though. Like I don't think they want to get into a situation where
he has to face a righty. That's fair.
You're not going to have a situation like they're not going to face the Braves with Freddie Freeman where they bunched up like all their lefties and then Brule did really well.
Yeah, I think maybe Ferguson gets hurt and Price can't come back. Maybe at that point, maybe their hands is forced at that point. But yeah, I think you're right.
Okay, so and then Bickford has not pitched well this year generally. No. He's pitched better of late, but I don't think he's going to be on the playoff roster.
Yeah.
We have 12 with Gonsolin and Almonte. So then the last spot would be between Canely, Gratterall, Trinan, and Price.
And that's where, like, that's why I think we should just order it. Trinan is in that top 13. And
for sure.
For me, it goes like.
He's probably in the top, like, 8. Or I guess 9.
Yeah, whatever. Point being, makes the cut. And then, like, it's Gratterall, Price are the next two up. And then, like, who do you have after that? That's to me, that's where it gets interesting.
You mean outside of our 12?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Trinan clearly at the top.
Yeah.
Gratterall, like, right there behind him, I think.
Yeah.
Then it's probably Canely.
Okay.
But like, Price in a matchup situation. They really didn't use Price in a lot of leverage. They used him in some leverage, but. He has pitched well.
Yeah. Like, no. I have Price, I think, a little higher than you. Not necessarily ahead of Canely per se, but in my mind, I think he's ahead of Canely. He's proven himself more, I think.
So we both sort of think Gonsolin and Almonte are going to be at least healthy enough to be on the roster in some fashion.
Yeah.
So it's up to us to pick one more. So are you taking Trinan then for your 13?
I am.
Okay, so I'm just going to note that because I think this is where we'll differ, only because I don't want to rely too much on the injured guys, and having said that, I'm going to go a bit against the grain because I was going to go Gratterall, but I think it might be a tough road back. So I am going to go Canely, the man who has only pitched in 4 games this year and just missed 4 months. So I think Canely just because he's already been activated.
Yeah.
So it's like he's one step ahead of that. So yeah, I think we've done it, Jacob. I think that's I think we're clearly going to be 100% right, as like always.
It's going to be Heath Embry.
they designate him for signing.
No! But hey,
that hasn't stopped them before. They can they designated for assignment Andy Burns last year and brought him back when Justin Turner got hurt in the NLCS. So anything can happen. I have a not. This is semi-related to what we were talking about. I'll explain why I have this trivia question after we get.
Semi-related kind of life, so.
Earworms. That's two earworms for today. Perhaps one of the position players we mentioned might reach base every time they bat this postseason.
There's going to be at least one.
Yeah, I agree. and it's going to be. Well, you know what. You know, it's not going to be Hanser because he's not going to bat, but he is going to pitch. That's my guess. No, the record for most plate appearances in a single Dodgers postseason with a 1,000 on base percentage is 3, accomplished by 2 players, 1 in the Jacob era. Can you name one or both?
I will throw a name or 2 or 3 out after this. There have been 2 players who, in 3 plate appearances,
in a single postseason.
In a single postseason. Got on base all of the time, right?
Yeah.
That's the cool.
I will refer back to how I worded it. They had 1,000 on base percentage.
Wait, man, how is that? I don't want to know how those two sentences can be different. I don't want to think about it. Okay. Man, this is.
I will say in one of the cases that the first way you described it is correct.
In one of the cases, oh man.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm confused, but we'll keep going. Is it like I don't know. I don't know. I'm not. We'll talk about it after. Yeah. I've been thinking about the. You know, I peeked ahead and been thinking about, especially you know, whomever in the wild card are, because this could either. This is probably, but not definitely, probably more of the early teens or aughts playoff appearances when the Dodgers were. More likely to be one and done. And then it's probably a bench-ish player.
I will give you a hint and say that is incorrect. Both years the Dodgers went to the World Series.
Great. Awesome. Wonderful.
I will give you another hint. I mentioned one of the answers earlier in the podcast.
Scroll up. Tommy Kingley.
If you did it.
Yeah. Got there.
Oh, you know what's funny about this? Just looking at the list, in 2021, Tony Gonsolin was 1-for-1 with in his plate appearance, so he's on the list, but not with 3 plate appearances.
Aww.
But he's not the one I mentioned. Okay. I mean, I did mention him.
I don't. So,
I'll give you the years.
Sure.
1978 and 2020.
2020, really interesting. Was it Matt Beatty?
That is Matt Beatty in 2020.
I remember that. Yeah, that plucked as soon as you said the year, I plucked back in my brain. I'm not going to guess the 70s player.
Before I give you the other answer, I would say the reason this trivia question came up because I wanted to bring him up because he was just designated for assignment by the Padres the other day, and he cleared waivers and elected free agency earlier on Wednesday. So Matt Beatty, old friend, current free agent. The other in 1978. Oh, Matt Beatty, before I get into this, three times up in the playoffs, he didn't bat in the World Series. 1 walk, 2 hit by pitch. the most painful of the 1,000 on base percentages. No, 1978, Manny Mota. He hit a double. He walked, and his other plate appearance was a sacrifice bunt. So... 1,000 OBP because it doesn't count.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. I was almost getting there, but I couldn't quite get there.
No, you did good.
Neat. You ready for your side of the coin? Yeah. All right, it's time for
questions from Craig.
5 questions from Craig. 4 questions that are a part of one question. Are you confused yet? For you. Yep. You ready? Yeah. You're confused. That's good. That's a good, it's a good frame of mind to be in before you start answering trivia questions. The Dodgers will travel to San Francisco to finish the road trip this weekend. This is the 23rd season since that venue's opening in April 2000. Oh my, I feel old.
Yeah.
Remember this opening? So this week's trivia is about Dodger leaders at that ballpark at by the Bay. Also, all of these are well, obviously, into the wild card, Jacob Air. Yeah. Eight Dodgers have five or more home runs at the multiple named ballpark. Who are these Dodgers who hit them into the Bay?
Wait, okay, so just to be fair, just because they have five home runs doesn't mean they hit it into the Bay, right? Like, just to be clear.
I mean, well, I mean,
because there's only so many splash hits.
Yeah,
so.
That's very limited.
It's just wordplay. I'm crediting Craig with
wordplay. I think you could, yeah, no.
I think some of them are like, well, I would just
into
go
the
with,
Bay Area sky. How about that?
I was going to say, just before we have any qualifiers, I will say Max Muncy because he qualifies for both.
Yeah. And he's one of the two players at the top of this list, tied with seven.
With seven, okay. Let's go 2000. So let's say Sean Green.
Sean Green had five.
Okay. And then, oh boy. Just go with the volume play here with Matt Kemp.
Five.
Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger is not on my list.
Justin Turner.
Justin Turner is not on my list.
You're lying. Okay. So, Andre Ethier?
Andre Ethier is not on my list.
Jock?
Jock is has five on the dot.
Yasiel Puig?
Nope.
He had a lot of triples. I'm counting those triples as home runs. Okay. This is where, so here's the deal. Like, I know the next question mentions this person by name, but so Kevin Elster hit three home runs in the opening game there. But I don't know if he hit two more. but just because I'm stumped here, I will say Kevin Elster.
Nope.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint. I'm going to give you, so you're missing, let's see, two players that hit five. And a player that hit six and a player that hit seven. So someone that's tied with Max Muncy. The player who's tied with Max Muncy hit 41 career home runs at this ballpark. Which I was going to ask, what do you call it? In your heart, what is this park called?
Besides Kevin Elster Field? No. Pac Bell Park.
It's Pac Bell. Yeah, I think.
I don't even know, like. It might be AT&T, to be honest.
I think it's AT&T to me.
Yeah.
But.
Wait, this person has 41
career home runs at Pac Bell.
Okay, and seven are with the Dodgers.
Yep.
Oh, man. So this is freaking me out. No. That's not true. I don't know why this is. Juan Uribe.
No.
Jeff Kent.
There you go.
Yeah.
Should have said him first. You want any more guesses, or you want me to tell you the other three?
I'll guess Gary Sheffield.
Gary Sheffield had four, close, but cigar.
So yeah, I'm out.
Corey Seager had six. Casey Blake had five.
Oh man.
And James Loney had five.
Come on now. I guessed a Dodger third baseman in Justin Turner, so I'm basically a bearded Dodger third baseman. So I'm giving myself credit for that.
Five Dodgers have hit two or more home runs in San Francisco since 2000. The only Dodger to hit three home runs in a game. Do you know who that is?
I think it's Kevin Elster.
Yeah, there you go. Can Eric name the other four players who hit two home runs in one game? Hint, three of those games happened in the same season.
Oh God, I don't have a I don't have a ton of memories about like multi-home run games there, which is making this difficult.
It will give you the season if you want it.
Okay, let me think for a second here about
I'm just going to let you know the other one was in the same season as Kevin Elster, but is not the season, the three-time season.
Okay. So, let's go with so it's 2000. Is it Gary Sheffield?
It is. On June 30th.
Okay, so I'm going to go let's go with Max Muncy.
Nope.
All right. Let's go with Adrian Gonzalez.
You got the last name right.
What? Oh, Luis Gonzalez?
Yep.
Wow. I was so confused by that.
So that's the season is 2007.
So James Loney, since he has five, had to have
He did.
I'm guessing he had two home run games and a one home run game. No. And there's one more or two more?
There is one more.
In 2007. Oh, what a disappointing year. Matt Kemp?
Nope.
Ethier?
Nope.
2007.
This player has 41 career
runs. Come on, Jeff Kent. All right.
Seven Dodgers with a minimum of 50 plate appearations at Multi-Communications co-named ballpark have an OPS over 900, just for you, against the Giants. Who are these batsmen? Hint, four of these players have between 50 and 70 career plate appearances on that list.
Wait, what, were you going to say 0.9?
I'm not saying anything.
I am throwing my headphones away. No, Max Muncy, let's just start with the big ones.
951, third on my list.
I'm going to go off book and go Adrian Beltre.
Nope. not on my list.
All right. Yasiel Puig.
Nope.
I figured all those triples had to count for something. He probably only has like three triples. Or no, he had like two in a game or something. I don't remember what it was. 50 plate appearances there, 2000s. Let's go back to the well with our good friend Gary Sheffield.
Gary Sheffield is number two on the list with a 1.079.
All right. Let's stay in that era and go Sean Green.
914.
Four more. Good God. okay. So since he has five home runs, is it James Loney?
It is.
No way.
It is not.
Yeah. What about our good friend Casey Blake?
Not on my list. Sorry, friend.
Cody Bellinger.
Nope.
Whew. This is rough. are there any years by chance? Because I think I'm.
Yeah, I've got the years. One player did it in 61 plate appearances between 2008 and 2010.
But I already said Casey Blake. Manny?
Manny with a 1.208.
God, he was.
another player did it on 50 plate appearances on the dot between 2001 and 2002.
Oh, that's a rough one.
yeah.
I already guessed Sheffield and Green.
Also a Giant at what point in their career?
You're just confusing me.
I try.
So now you're not doing a bad job. It's good. You're reveling in my misfortune.
Oh, I am.
No question. Why am I not thinking of these people? 2000, 2001.
With a 340 batting average and a 340 on base.
So, Todd Hundley?
One more guess for that player.
This is so bad. I don't know what I'm doing. Nope. Maybe that's not right. No, you know what? I'll just Marquise Grissom.
There you go.
Nice.
Correct. Next player has a 905 in 51 plate appearances between 2019 and 2022.
Gavin Lux.
Gavin Lux. And the next player has a 904 from 2005 to 2008. Oh, also, 41 career home runs.
Yeah, I get the 0508 also should have been a giveaway, yeah, to be fair. Yeah. So I'll say Jeff Kent. Nice.
Clayton Kershaw leads all pitchers with 25 or more starts at Oracle at All Park with his 1.6 career ERA in San Francisco. Eric, there are six other Dodger starting pitchers who made at least five starts at that ballpark with an ERA under three. Can you name these low run hurlers?
Walker Buehler.
Nope.
No, come on. What is happening? If his start in June when he walked off the mound messed his ERA
that, up. I was going to say, didn't he have like a really bad...
It wasn't that, but it was four innings or whatever. So,
didn't he? Wasn't his first career appearance at AT&T as well, and like in relief, and it was really bad. Looking this up,
I don't know. He had a bad relief appearance against the Rockies at home. I don't remember otherwise. So before we, let's just go six other five starts. Zach Greinke.
No.
I mean, at a certain point, we need to talk about trust issues because you're clearly lying. No, Chad Billingsley.
Chad Billingsley just missed the cut with a 3.13 ERA. Ugh.
Five or more starts. Hyunjin Ryu.
With a 2.58.
I don't even think this is going to be right, but let's go with, what about Brad Penny?
Brad Penny did not make the cut, but 3.32 was close. Mm. Just Derek behind Bellingsley. Derek Lowe with a 2.05.
Oh, wow. All right.
Number three on this list.
I don't know if I'm going to top that one. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to top that one. So let's see. who the hell started for... I'm having a hard time remembering some guys at this point, which is funny. I don't know. I think I'm out.
Okay.
On this one.
Number two on the list is Hiroki Kuroda with a 197 in five starts. Number four is Rich Hill with a 248. Julio Urias is next with 257. And then it's Ryu, and then it's Odalis Perez with a 285.
I will say this, that's on me for not guessing Urias too. Like, I wanted to guess Rich Hill, but when I said Buehler, I also should have said Urias because I figured his, like, that's the another, you could argue, like, I know, I think Urias should get his due, and I apologize to everyone for not getting it because that should have been a good one.
It was Walker's third appearance, and he only gave up one run. I was misremembering. All right, you did good,
especially I did. Not so bad.
Redeem yourself a little bit there. The 2022 Dodgers are 17 doubles away from setting a new franchise record. Have they hit any today?
Nope. Okay. I looked just before we did this.
for the contest, and Jacob can go first. Thank you. Name the checks in the mail. Name the player who records the 313th double, and for the tiebreaker, name the game number this event takes place. I will take Freddie Freeman.
Oh, so the player is the bet and the tiebreaker is the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, I don't know. They're at, what game are they at? 142?
Today is 142.
That should have been the trick question.
We both got it. Yeah, you know. they are averaging like 2.1 doubles a game.
Yeah. This is the way math real quick. 150 on the dot.
Okay, so you're saying nine more games, or really eight more games, plus the end of the game that is currently going while we're recording. Yep. 150. Okay. I will say, I'm going to say Mookie Betts.
Okay.
And we have to get it on the dot. If it's tie, well, no, if it's tiebreaker, it's tiebreaker. I don't want to Price is Right you, but I think I'm going to go 149.
Okay. Well, it was a tiebreaker. We've got a different player, so, and it's going to be right, Freddie exactly. Freeman. So,
yeah. So I considered, let's just consider this two bets.
Fair enough. With the new September roster limits, besides putting Max Muncy in bubble wrap during those last games against the Rockies, how does Dave Roberts and his staff manage this team over the next 3 weeks in terms of playing time, etc.?
Well, we talked about this a little earlier, or I guess we didn't get too much into it, but with the lack of like full September rosters, everyone's still going to play. Like, you know, they're not going to like push it like last year, I think. You know, they're going to still try and win, but I would imagine they'll get occasional rest. But even like guys like Freeman and Trey Turner are going to play like pretty much every day. You know, maybe like in the last weekend they leave after a couple innings or something. But I think all those guys are still going to play. Like, it's really like we talked about, Vargas and Alberto have barely played. And that's with Lux out, right? So when Lux is back, you have basically 12 guys who play. And then I would imagine one of those four, Gallo, Trace, Bellinger, Taylor, I would imagine Gallo maybe gets the short end. He's been starting more, but just because he's left-handed, but they pinch hit for him. Yeah, I just think everyone plays. I don't think they're going to go...
I think everyone gets a little bit more aggressive of a day off, you know, instead of zero, Freeman gets like one a week, maybe.
I think one a week is strong for those guys, but I think
maybe.
Yeah, I don't think they go, maybe they go one less like DH start for Will Smith, you know, or something.
And I think the other, the obvious answer is that if anyone is at all nursing anything, they say.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, that's what they've basically been doing with Lux, right? They're like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to make sure he's healthy. And then,
and you know, should anything like strange happens where, say, like so it would be the Cardinals, I guess, really start going on a run, maybe they, you know, they definitely want the bye. So, but you know, it would take such a strange matter of fortunes for, because one, even if they are slightly resting guys, not pushing the starters to their absolute limits, they're still going to win a lot of games, so they don't really have to do anything. But should, again, say they run into an unlucky streak and the Cardinals just start, you know, Pujols hits, gets the 7-15, at that point maybe they'll, you know, go back to normal. But
I will say this, the Cardinals are not going to catch them.
And I'm talking doomsday scenarios here, but yeah.
The Cardinals won earlier Wednesday, so that pulled them to within 15 games of the Dodgers. So the magic number to top the Cardinals to get that bye is six.
Oh, it's so, even closer than I thought.
Yeah.
How much do they care about home field and LCS?
I think they would go for that. Like they're not going to,
especially since, like, as you've been saying, and I agree with you that they're not going to go hardcore. You know, they have the Hanover lineup in today. They're not going to play that every day. You know.
Yeah. So the Braves lost, and the Mets lost today. So I believe I'm looking this up as we do it. So their magic number over the Mets is 10. The Mets are leading the Braves currently by a half a game in the East. So the magic number over the Braves is 9. because the Dodgers own the tiebreaker over the Braves and not the Mets. So they both have 55 losses, the Braves and Mets. So that's pretty close to, but I think it's at least more plausible. Like, for instance, just to put it in other terms, after the Mets and Braves lost today, so the Dodgers lead the Mets by 10.5 games. So it's after this game in Arizona, it's either going to be 10 or 11 games. So pretty big lead, both, I think, in both scenarios. So I think they're pretty set in that regard. But yeah, like I said, they're not gonna like, you know, go full bore, and they're gonna pull a starter out an inning earlier than normal, you know, just to sort of conserve them for October, but make sure everyone's still sort of healthy and built up. So yeah, I don't think you're gonna see. All that said, like, Tyler Anderson like keeps going seven innings, so who knows? But yeah, so I think it's like case by case, right? Like if Kershaw cruised last night in the division clincher, he went seven, only gave up two hits. So like, yeah, that was, if something like that's going on, they're gonna roll with it, I think. But
among the improvements this team has made, the team is currently hitting .261, the highest batting average since 2014 when they hit .265. In 2021, the Dodgers hit .244, which was the lowest since the 1984 Dodgers also hit .244. Do you think this improvement can solely be placed on Freeman and Trey Turner seasons, or have you seen any overall approach changes by the Dodgers this season?
I mean, Freeman and Turner are the big drivers, but I think the other one is Gavin Lux, like, just being an everyday player for the most part, and like just sort of coming into.
I also think it's just a well observed, you know, organizational. I feel like this started happening after the 2018 World Series, where anecdotally a big reason why Boston won is their ability to put the ball in play and just see things happen. But I think even more so with the, you know, the altered ball and the fly ball being the long fly being a little less reliable way. It just seems like organization, they have placed a higher, I don't want to say necessarily a higher priority on the hit tool, because that's always a high priority. But it's also, they just have the, you know, it's nice when you can just go get a Freddie Freeman who emphasizes this. Mookie was, and I think it was one of the, I think it was an after game interview, but I'm failing to place exactly when. But Mookie was interviewed, and he talked about how, and he credited Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner, but definitely Freddie, on him changing his approach slightly, where instead of really trying to drive counts, he's more going up ready to hit, and then you just get ready to hit the ball, put things in the play, and we've definitely seen that work out. You know, how much of that is just him saying that versus actual changes, you know, who knows? But he seemed earnest to me when he said that. And I feel like, I don't know, organizationally, it seems like that's been a larger emphasis.
I think the one thing that got talked about, too, is at some point a couple months ago, I think that your teams are allowed iPads in the dugout for, like, that's loaded with, like, batter versus
Plants versus stuff. Zombies. And
exactly. And so there's maybe, I don't know what the limit is, but there's usually something like 10. There could be like 10 iPads in the dugout. So like someone will have an at bat, and then they'll go like just head in the iPad, like trying to figure out what's wrong. At a certain point, I think it was led by Freeman, if I'm remembering this right, where they basically said, like, let's stop not ignoring the iPad, but like get your head in the game rather than, you know, let's talk about it. Like, they're like, the hitters are discussing the at bats with each other, still using the iPad occasionally to look at stuff, like, technically, but like not getting so bogged down in the minutia of it, like during a game. Like, they're more maybe responsive, at least anecdotally, like during the game. So maybe that's part of it. But again, it really comes from, like, having Mookie Betts, Trey Turner, and Freddie Freeman, yeah, like 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, every night. It's really easy to credit the approach when the player making that, yeah, approach difference is Mookie Betts.
it's like the old thing, like, you know, Magic Johnson in his very brief coaching tenure with the Lakers, like, his big thing was like, why don't you just do this? And he couldn't quite get why players couldn't be weren't as like committed as him, or like, just do this, it's very easy, you know, or something like that, like, because the game came to him so easily. But yeah, so it's like, it's one of those things, like, yeah, I guess it's the personnel too. But yeah, I think they have a pretty good idea. That said, you know, they're, it is still funny because currently, I know Max Muncy's been hitting a lot better since like the beginning of August. His seasonal batting average at this moment is 200. Cody Bellinger just went slightly under 200 with a ground out. Joey Gallo is 163. So like, there's still, yeah, there's still some, but I mean, again, the that's part of, you know, a team. Like, some people are going to be really good, some people are not, but like, it's just, it is, there are still outliers. But I think part of that, the sort of the, I think, you know, if this were a more normal year, because I think the batting average this year, I think, I don't remember what it is right now, but it was like 244 the other day as a league, when one of the lowest like league wide batting averages in a long time, like something like the fourth or fifth lowest like in the modern era or since the live ball era or something. So if they're hitting like 261 in that, if it's like a normal year where the batting average is in like the 250s or maybe 260, you know, they could be, their numbers could be even crazier. So maybe that's the case. I don't know.
The Bear has brought Chicago style hot beef sandwiches back into the spotlight. LA has its French dips and hot pastrami sandwiches. Of course, there are meatball subs in that ilk too. Name me some of those hot meat sandwiches on a hoagie style roll, of course. And will Jacob try to snag a French dip the next time he is in LA? I will. I have limited time in LA itself. I'll actually be in San Diego more than LA. It may be KBBQ and nothing else. We'll see. Excuse me. I have not seen The Bear. Have you seen The Bear?
Yeah, I watched it about a month ago or a couple weeks ago. It is very, very good. And it's intense in a way that I have a hard time explaining. I've talked to people who work in the restaurant industry who said it's the most accurate depiction of a commercial restaurant kitchen they've ever seen. And that makes it incredibly difficult to watch. It's like, did you see Uncut Gems?
I did not.
Okay. So that movie was really good. And also a movie where I only ever want to watch it once in my life. And because it's like, it's so intense. Like, I don't even know why, like, but it's a very good show. I enjoyed it quite a bit, but it was a chore, like, watching it, just because it's not cringeworthy is not the right word, because I find like I have a hard time watching Curb Your Enthusiasm sometimes.
Uncomfortable?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And it's just like, it was really good. But also I think part of the reason, so it's on Hulu, and I don't know if it's just like the sound or what, that show got me into being a closed caption guy, because the sound is so bad on it. Like you, it's hard to hear like the dialogue. So I've started doing closed captioning and it's a lot better. So yeah.
I did not need that show to bring hot beef thing. Right. Chicago hot beef. I am a big fan. There's a deli here in Lawrence, Latchkey, that has a really, really good one. And yeah, they're close enough to Phillies that, hey, I'll take anything like that. But obviously, I'm a big fan of the Philly pot dip. And I will, if I have the chance, I'll do Laner's, obviously delicious. But for my money, maybe the best hot sandwich in L.A. Saying it's better than a number 19 or a lamb French dip is a lot. But it up there is the meatball from Bay Cities. It's just so good. That bread is made. I mean, the godmother's amazing, but it's made for a meatball sandwich, and it's just on a cold day. Oh, I don't know if it gets better.
In terms of actual like Italian beef, I think the closest place that has that to me is Portillo's, which is like a half hour away. Which is, I'm not going to drive usually a half hour to get that, unless I'm like going in that area, which I'm rarely doing. It's like in Orange County. But I do love that quite a bit. But also, I wanted to give a shout out to Bon Mies as well. Mm. Occasionally hit this. Even like the rando, I forgot the name of the place. I think it's, is it BMC Pho? Like that's just like the sort of generic like chain fast food like Bon Mies. They're not the best, but they're still good. Like they're, you know, and they're usually like buy two, get one free.
I'm weird with Bon Mies because I have one.
You're cilantro. Yeah.
Yeah. Cilantro makes me sick. Not only it tastes a little bit like soap, but I think other people probably have that worse, but it literally usually gives me a really, really bad headache and I get sick to my stomach. And there are, you know, I'm in air quoting here, Bon Mies that don't have cilantro, but I know that's not a real Bon Mies. So I feel always weird altering it in such a way when I know it's such a sort of core ingredient to it.
I will say too, like, you know, Philly cheesesteak's obviously really good just generally. Of the sort of chain restaurant, I was a huge fan of Capriotti's cheesesteak, but there used to be one, this was years ago now, but it's not, they closed down. So there's not really a Capriotti's that's reasonably close. But for a chain restaurant, I actually do like the Jersey Mike's Philly cheesesteak.
Yeah, one of the things I love about Philly's, and I feel we've talked about Philly's already, but I don't care. We're going to keep going, is that even a off-brand, weird-tasting Philly, Pepper Jack's is a chain that's really big out here, and it doesn't taste, to me, anything that close to what I would get in Philly itself, but it's still delicious. It's still delicious bread and meat and cheese and peppers and all of that.
Gooey and melty.
I always thought for a chain that I was really impressed by Philly's Best, which aren't out here anywhere.
There's a few of those. They're pretty good. There's one, I don't remember if it was, I don't think it's Philly's Best, but the one that, there's also a Charlie's that I think is reasonably, that's closer to me. But for some, they're like default has like lettuce and tomato and mayonnaise. Yeah, which is like, what are you doing? Like
the Charlie's buffalo chicken sandwich was always a favorite of mine. I like that one.
And it's still good. You can just get the stuff without it. But it's just funny, like when you're like, well, what are you doing here? This is very weird. But yeah, like hot sandwiches.
You and I really should do a Philly, like just hit, because you know there's the two or three sort of touristy Philly places in Philly, and then there's like three, this is where the cool kids get their Philly, and the real cool kids say, we don't eat Phillies, and they're lying to you. They're delicious. How could you not?
That's true. And look, these are all great. Like the Hat is there's one relatively near me, and that's always good.
That's home of the meat sweats, the Hat.
Yeah, it's a total salt bomb, but like it's still really, really good. So damn it, Craig, you've done it again.
This is the worst case of the questions from Craig hunger I've had in a while. So,
oh man, all right. Well, I think we've done it. We've solved the playoff roster. That's pretty much set.
Yeah,
and so we're recording this on Wednesday. The NLDS, which we're assuming the Dodgers are going to get a buy into, doesn't start for 4 weeks. Yes. So there's a lot of time to sort of figure this out, but I mean, we've already solved it. So that's just a matter of keeping everyone healthy at this point. But I think we've done it. So we've done all we can do today. That's been the lineup with True Blue LA. For Jacob Birch, I am Eric Steven. We will talk to you next week.